The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve? Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon and welcome back. Today is Monday, 20th day of August, 2012. Hope you had a great weekend. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow down 14, S&P down 2, comp down 6, gold up $3, and crude off 10 cents a barrel. Markets in Asia were mostly flat in overnight trading. Japan's Nikkei was up 0.09%. Shares in Europe were higher originally, with the exception of the FTSE, which was down 0.17%. U.S. futures were up slightly higher prior to the opening bell. Now, Europe began the week in risk-on mode after reports yesterday that the ECB was considering capping sovereign bond yields at predetermined levels to aid European countries struggling to contain funding costs. However, the ECB's denial of such a plan sent the euro a bit lower this morning. Best Buy has named Herbert Joly its new CEO. Joly is the former CEO of Carlson, the parent company of TGI Friday and Radisson Hotels. The founder, Richard Schulz, has decided to take the company back private, and Joly is his go-to guy. The Chicago Mercantile Exchange plans on creating the first major European derivatives exchange within days. Now, the exchange would officially open in the second quarter of 2013 and follows the company's failed attempt at purchasing the LME after the Hong Kong Exchanges and Clearing outbid it earlier this year. The main U.S. economic announcement we had out today was the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago's National Activity Index. How did that go, Michael? Do you recall what the numbers were on that?
I don't recall what the numbers were. I didn't show anything really major for the economic reports, but let me just take a look, and I will be happy to tell you exactly what happened.
All right. The Spanish government announced over the weekend that it wants to see details about the support that the ECB is willing to give peripheral bond markets if Spain submits a formal request for a bailout to the Eurozone's bailout mechanism, the EFSF and the ESM. Goldman, in a comment, said that it's now time to bet on a European comeback. They do have a habit of getting it right, like them or not. China, now the big, really big, kind of big news, global news, China's Shanghai composite tumbled to a post-low crisis, or a post-crisis low this morning, which is a rather sharp and stunning divergence from the U.S. stock market. I mean, we're closing in on all-time highs, and China, if you look at the Shanghai, it's going to heck in a handcart, and many analysts are signaling this as a hard landing for China's economy. In fact, one of the head guys over at Raymond James today made a statement. He set a target of 1550 for the S&P 500. And that is, well, let's talk about how that comes into play. We've been talking about how incredibly quiet it's been in the market the past few weeks. Oddly quiet, eerily quiet. Pretty much every day, the market does nothing, and then after that, nothing happens. And then it repeats. Now, some of you know who Dennis Gartman is, but he quoted a line from Charles Brady of the Fox Business Network, and I posted this on the blog last night. And this was actually posted, I believe, last Thursday, or is when he made the statement. Since August 3rd, 8 sessions, the Dow has traded as high as 13,223 and as low as 13,094 for a total range of 128 points. So let me say that again. Over 8 sessions, the Dow had a range of 128 points. I've been giving you those numbers in S&P figures, but here's the equivalent in the Dow figures. Now, in percentage terms, that is the narrowest 8-day trading range since 1950. No conviction.
Wow.
No volume. That is, how quiet? That's 62 years of quiet. Now, we just went through that. Today, on our day session, we have a grand total of a 5-point range. And if we include Globex, we can stir up some excitement and call it an 8-point range. Okay. Now, prior to us getting into this very narrow trading range, going back to August 3rd, the average daily range in the S&P 500, day session or Globex, was 18 to 20 points. And the last blog post I put out, prior to the spike we had, I think, last Thursday, a little bit of a spike. Actually, it looked like a spike compared to the preceding days. The average was 10.5. So what we've seen so far this morning, price ran up on Globex overnight and tagged our weekly trading zone up here at 18.19. It traded down to the 14.10.11, and once it hit there and found support during the second hour the market was open, we said, well, okay, it looks like now it's going to try to make the return trip at least back to 14.15, and that's exactly what it has done so far. Could it push its way back up to the 18.19? It should. Our ranges are very narrow this week. That's a function of math. And they'll continue to be narrow until there is some substantial breakout, either to the upside or the downside. And this is the March 30th high, right here, which was 14.13, roughly. Okay. Now, we broke out above that last week. We were above it last night on Globex. We traded back below it again this morning. And right now, we're back above it, trading inside of this zone, 14.14, 14.15. This is the hourly chart of the S&P 500 E-mini futures. Facebook hit a new low today. It dropped below $19. But if you're a banker, not such a bad deal. Wall Street bankers were paid extremely handsomely to sell the $16 billion of stock they sold on the Facebook IPO. Specifically, they were paid $176 million in fees. Even though the IPO was probably the market's most colossal IPO disaster ever, investors' capital has been cut in half. Investors who bought Facebook stock on the IPO have lost $8 billion. Now, while Facebook investors digest the fact that the stock has dropped to $19, 18 and change as of today, from the IPO price of 38. Now, the IPO price was 38, but during that trading day, it actually bumped up to 45 at one point. So some people actually bought at 45. Facebook bankers are divvying up another $100 million they made on the Facebook stock, this time in a less visible fashion. So what creates the second bonanza? Here we go, guys. You're going to love this. Shorting Facebook stock. In other words, selling Facebook stock they didn't own and then cashing in when the price dropped. Wall Street didn't call this shorting the stock because shorting is widely understood to be a bet that a stock will drop. And obviously, bankers don't want to be seen as betting against the clients they just sold IPO stock to. Instead, the big short position that Facebook's lead banker, Morgan Stanley, took in Facebook stock at the IPO price is described as engaging in price stabilization. Also, shorting stocks generally entails risk. If you short a stock that goes up, you lose money. And bankers don't like to take risks when they can coin money without taking risks. So this particular cash printing tool enables Wall Street to short the stocks without taking the risk that the price will go up and that they'll get burned. So, what is price stabilization? It's called also the over-allotment option. The over-allotment option, also known as the green shoe, is a mechanism Wall Street banks use in most IPOs. This mechanism gives the banks the option to sell up to 15% more stock than is initially expected to be sold in the IPO. The stated goal of this option is to enable bankers to more closely match supply with demand and thus reduce the volatility that might otherwise follow the IPO pricing. This option also allows the bank to buy stock in the aftermarket without taking undue risk, thus supporting the price of the stock. In other words, when there appears to be excess demand for the stock on the IPO, the lead underwriter has the ability to sell 15% more shares than it has already agreed to sell. In selling these shares, the bank takes a short position in the stock by selling shares it doesn't yet own. If the bank were doing this as a naked short, selling shares, it didn't have a right to buy later at a specific price, the bank would be taking a huge risk. The stock might go up, forcing the bank to buy back stock to cover its short at a much higher price. But the over-allotment option allows the bank to buy another 15% of shares from the company at the IPO price, thus allowing it to sell additional stock on the IPO without taking the risk that the stock might go up. Importantly, the bank gets paid its full IPO commission on the extra shares it sells if it exercises its option. So it has an incentive to sell them regardless of how much excess demand there is, and there's no risk to the bank if the stock price jumps because the bank can cover it short by buying the stock back at the IPO price. Now, what if the stock actually drops after the IPO, like it did with Facebook? Well, that's where the bank really cashes in. They not only have their IPO commissions, they have proceeds from shorting the stock at the IPO price and then buying it back at a lower price. With Facebook, we all remember that the underwriters supported the stock for the first day. They stood on the bid, helping it to close just above the IPO price. Then the underwriters gave up on supporting it, and the stock has traded pretty much straight down from there. And at some point, shortly after the IPO, the underwriters covered the short position they established by over-allotting Facebook stock on the IPO, and they covered at the lower price. The net gain from this trade, according to the Wall Street Journal, was $100 million. And the Facebook bankers are now divvying up those proceeds. Once again, the man in the street who bought at 38, he's seeing his shares trade today at 18 and change. But the bankers that brought the stock to market, they've done very, very well for themselves. And with that, Michael, I'll pass you the mic and the screens, and let's ask you, please, to do the daily recap. Not much going on, guys. Kind of a quiet session. But we got
it's unfortunate,
it. Yeah.
But true.
Apple just became the biggest stock ever in history, market cap eclipsing that of Microsoft back in 1999, on its way to becoming the first trillion-dollar company. And when the iPhone 5 comes out, they expect to have the go-ahead from China Mobile to release the iPhone 5 there, where it's actually made. If that happens, analysts are saying they will sell 250 million iPhone 5s. You know how many iPhone 5s have been sold altogether?
No.
No, I'm not iPhone 5s, but just iPhones?
I don't know.
365 million. So think about
that's
this, guys.
iPhone 5s.
Okay, all iPhones put together, from the 1 through the 4S, there's been 365 million of them sold. But the iPhone 5, if the go-ahead is given from China, worldwide sales are expected for this one phone to hit 250 million. It's more than half of every iPhone ever sold. So, and, of course, the big talk is Apple TV. What's coming? What's going to happen? And that news will probably be out before September 12th or on September 12th. We'll find out more about that. All right, Michael, I can see your screens.
All right. All right, you can see the screens. That's a start. Let us take it one step further here and start the recording. All right. You guys can see I just took a long trade here while Dwayne was talking. The entry arrow, the exit arrow on the NQ. The ES... hang on, I'll go over all this in a minute here. Here we go. Let me start the recording. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Monday, August 20th, 2012. kind of go over the results from the live trading room this morning, the trades that we took, the trades we didn't take, the things that set up and didn't set up, and what we thought of the actual market action this morning. Results. Well, right now, I am plus 13 ticks on the NQ. I'm flat on the ES, and hang on a second. I think I'm down a couple of ticks on crude. I'm down 2 ticks on crude. All right, and those are the results of the morning session. If you have not taken a free trial with us and you want to take a free trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply and sign up for the free trial. What you get in the free trial is 5 days in the live trading room. You get all of the indicators, access to all the indicators and charts that you see here. There is even more indicators and charts than you see here, but you get access to all this. And you get to watch us trade live. You also get access to Dwayne and I. And you get to experience the family atmosphere in our live trading room. Now, for everyone that's on a free trial right now, some of you guys are rolled over from last week. I'm going to be sending you all information about what it takes to become a partner. We have partners meetings every Thursday. For those of you who don't know what happens when you become a partner, first, you get 3 months worth of mentoring, and that is 3 months in the live trading room for 2 hours a day, every business day for 3 months, from 9:30 to 11:30 Eastern Time. You also get access to Dwayne and I. You get the indicators that you see here and a whole bunch more. You get the indicators for life. It's a lifetime license for the indicators as long as you have a DT Pro account. You get access to the members area. You get access to the chat room. You get access to the members area where we have over 150 hours of video. You get access to the weekly partners meetings. We have them every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You get access to swing trades that we put out and everything else that we do. You get access to Dwayne and I. You get all that stuff for 3 months. After the 3 months, you still have the indicators. Our hope is that in that 3 month span, you'll have found your way with the indicators and you'll be able to trade on your own. If not, if you just like the family atmosphere and you want to hang out with us in a live trading room, you can continue to do that, and it's only $75 a month after the initial 3 months. Okay? That is what you get when you become a CFRN partner. Now, moving on. The live trading room this morning. Let's just go over what I did in there, okay? I'll start with the ES in the live trading room. All right. Right here was the only trade that I took this morning. There was this right here, right at the open. It pulled back up and tested the BBC. The BBC was right in the middle of the weekly trading zone, so I did not take the trade. I waited until the BBC was outside the zone, but I hadn't realized at the time that we had a double bottom in place. We didn't put in a lower swing. I always like to have a lower swing. I took the trade, and then a few guys in the live trading room alerted me to the fact that we didn't have a lower swing, so I got out at break even on the trade. And you can see that trade did go the full 2 points that I would have been looking for. But as it progressed down here, you know, there was no way I was going to short into a weekly trading zone. That's just part of my rules. Moving on, we had just a whole bunch of slow sideways action in here. There was a long opportunity right in here. I didn't take it because I didn't like the way the DMT looked, and you know, it was just going sideways. So I wasn't looking. I wasn't looking to take it here. The YM at the time was up at its weekly trading zone, so I didn't want to take any trades on the long side at the time. You can see it did work out. It went the full 2 points. It drew down a little bit. At first, it went 1 point right here, so I would have gotten a break even right here because I know I would have moved my stop up to break even. It would have taken me out of break even. Had I gotten into the trade and left my stops alone, then obviously I would have gotten 2 points out of it. You can see right now we're inside the weekly trading zone again. We had a pierce of the envelope over here, but given the range of the day, you know, it's a 5.5 point range from the open. It's still a 5.5 point range from the open. Normally a pierce of a blue envelope down here is just a 5 to 6 point move up. I just don't see it happening right now. We got a little bit of a move up, but not that much. All right, that was the ES. I didn't trade the YM at all because, as you can see, the YM was stuck in and out of its weekly trading zones right here all morning. You know, there are only 20 points in between these two zones right here, so I wasn't taking any trades in there. The first opportunity, had you been looking for one here on the 500 contract, was the pullback up to the BBC right here with the bearish divergence. Right here. All right, that dropped down about 15 points, then it pulled back up and went right into the zone. Then it went down to the zone below it, back up to the zone above it. And you can see how that's just been going back and forth between the zones. What I'm looking for, what I want to see, is a breakaway from all these zones. All right, the zones are really tight this week because the range was really tight last week. We need to expand the range this week, otherwise the zones are going to be really tight next week as well. That said, we moved on to markets where we didn't have any zones. Over here on the NQ, I took two trades. I took this trade this morning. I missed a couple trades right here, right after the open. On the NQ 4-tick range, and this is the way you do every 4-tick range trade, you know, every 4-tick range chart. We have them on all the markets that we trade, the NQ, the YM, the ES, the 6E, crude oil, the Russell, soybeans. We have them on all the markets we trade, right? And it's the same thing. You look for your bearish cross like this, or the, you know, you look for a crossover of the MA1 over the BBC. In this case, it's a cross down. Once that's done, you look for the price to pull away from the BBC, come back up and test it, and then close back in the direction that the cross was, okay? When that happens, you want to see some divergence down here between the green line and the cycle portion of the slingshot, which is the thick red and blue line, all right? In this case, we had all that, so the close of that bar right there would have been the spot to short, all right? You short right there, take some profit, or just stay in it for the whole ride down. The next opportunity, it happened again right here, but it also happened again right over here. Chances are you would have been still in this one right here, okay? But it happened again right here for an opportunity on the way down. It also did it over here. You see we had a bearish cross. Actually, there were two of them. There was a bullish cross attached to the BBC with an up close. That one didn't work out. I didn't take that one. But there was a bearish cross here. Pull back to the BBC with a down close with bearish divergence, and it stopped me out pretty much the tick, you know, maybe by a couple extra ticks, and then it tanked. Down here, it did it again, but the cycle was moving up down here, so I didn't look to short it again. And then I didn't do anything else with the NQ all morning until right over here when Dwayne was just talking a few minutes ago. We had a bullish cross, a test at the BBC with an up close, and everything else was moving up pretty strong here. That's why I took that trade. Everything else was sideways during all this period right here. That's why I didn't take any trades in there. All right. So that's what put me up 13 ticks on the NQ in the morning. I didn't trade the YM at all. This is the ES 4-tick range for those of you guys who like to trade the ES. But as I said, with the 4-tick range charts, you're doing the same exact thing over and over and over again across all the markets using the same exact indicator set. Okay? So what you would look for would be a bearish cross, test of the BBC with a down close with some divergence. Bullish cross, test of the BBC with an up close with some divergence down here. All right? Bearish cross, test of the BBC with a down close with some divergence down here on the slingshot. Okay? Bullish cross, tested the BBC with an up close with some bullish divergence. All right, that's the bullish divergence right there. All right, so that's how you would trade the ES 4-tick range. There were more opportunities, obviously, on the ES 4-tick range. One of the things that we said this morning was, today with the tight range that we had today, you know, swing for singles, don't swing for the fence. All right, let me find my crude oil. Here it is, I believe. Yes, it is. Hang on a second. Let me just get rid of something that's on there right now. All right. Now, on the crude, I took a couple of trades this morning. I missed right after the open, I missed three trades in a row right here. Again, this is the crude 4-tick range. So you're looking for your bearish cross, you tested the BBC, and the down close with the bearish divergence. So it happened there, there, and there this morning. The first one that I took was right in here, okay? This trade that I took here wasn't one of those, though. When this was coming together over here, I had said, I think if we drop down below this level, because this was the low of the day, and we had three bottoms right there, I said, if we drop down below that level, it's going to keep going down. And so I put in a sell stop down here. I think I put it in at 65 or 66 right in here. And as I expected, once it dropped through that level, it pulled back a little bit. And once it dropped through that level, it triggered me into the short trade, and it gave me, it had 12 ticks profit at one point. But I think I landed 6 ticks on it. All right, the next trade was right here. We had some bearish divergence right here on the down close. I don't like it as much when the cycle is in the middle of the slingshot, or it's toward the middle. I like it better when the cycle is overbought or oversold. But anyway, I took the trade, and it stopped me out pretty much to the tick, and then it went in the direction that I thought it was going to go. All right, so that put me at minus 2 ticks. From there, there were more opportunities in here on the crude, but I was missing them while we were going over other stuff. And that's pretty much where we are right now. You can see right now we have bearish divergence. We'll pull back up and test to the BBC here at 96.10. After the bearish cross, we would look for a down close. All right, after testing the BBC. That would be all we need. All right, and then we would look to get short on that. If you look over here on the ES, the weekly trading zone seems to be holding there on the ES and there on the YM. It seems to be holding. All right, we have pierces of the envelopes everywhere, but we'll see how the market reacts to all this. All right, guys, I don't see any questions coming in here other than Robin's. I don't see any questions coming in here, so I'm going to stop the recording here. All right, if anybody does have any questions, you can email us support@cfrn.net. That's support@cfrn.net, and we will answer you as quickly as possible. All right. There. Okay, the recording has stopped.
All right. All right. Thank you very much.
David's in the green room.
Now, are you... You're not in a trade at the moment, are you?
No, I am not in a trade.
Not in a trade.
Nope. And I had the results that you had asked for earlier. I had them somewhere. Here they are. The Chicago Fed national activity. The prior was minus 0.34, and this one came out at minus 0.13. I think that's positive. But it was a very low impact thing, so I'm not sure it's going to make too much of a difference.
Okay. On the blog last night, guys, and for those of you that are new, visiting us for the first time, welcome. Very glad to have you with us. If you only hear the sound of our voice and you're wondering what charts we're talking about and what indicators we're talking about and how do you get a golden ticket to view those, it's pretty simple. Go to cfrn.net, and on the right-hand side of any page, you'll find a radio tower, and below that you'll find a red, white, and blue button that says click here. If you click that, it'll take you to a page. You'll do a very quick registration. You only have to do the registration once a week, and then you'll be given a link that will bring you into a GoToWebinar type setting, okay, where you'll be able to see live charts, live data, our indicators, everything. So if you're new to the show, again, welcome. Follow those simple instructions. You'll not only be able to hear our voices, but you'll be able to see everything that we're talking about that we have displayed up on the screen. So again, under the radio tower, on any page at CFRN, there's a red, white, and blue button that says click here. Click that. It will take you to the page where you get in here and have a look at the charts. And then what will happen tomorrow is you'll just get an email reminding you, hey, today's show starts at 12 noon Eastern. Click here to join. So then tomorrow it's one-click access. You don't have to go through that whole process every day. But you'll have to do it again next Monday, once a week. Last night, put together a couple of videos, and I'm calling this series Simple E-Mini Trading Method, Video 1 and Video 2. I went all the way back to... I just scrolled back as far as my data would take me, and I got all the way back to, without adding more data, I got back to July 25th. And so video number one has July 25th and 26th in it, and number two has July 27th, which was a Friday, and then the 29th, which was a Sunday, and then July 30th, which was a Monday. And I'm going to continue on with this series until we catch up to the current day. And no promises on whether I'll be able to grind out one video a day or not. Probably it'll be more like one every 3 days. But by the time we're done, what you will have is you'll have in excess, or at least a minimum, of 30 days of continuous trading activity, global markets. Because one of the big problems out there, and many of you are already aware of this, and many of you who are newer in the process of learning this, is this thing called curve-fitting data. In other words, someone has a particular set of indicators, and they wait patiently until suddenly price action just lines up perfectly, and they go and take a bunch of pictures and make a couple videos, and that day and time becomes their sales pitch until the next time, however, it doesn't matter how long it takes, but the next time all the stars align and everything is perfect, they take a bunch of pictures and they shoot a couple videos, and then they layer that on top of the old one. And so now their sales pitch has grown, and over time the sales pitch gets deeper and deeper and deeper. The question you have to ask yourself is, what about those gaps in time? Okay, you showed me that one day back in January, and then you showed me those two great days in March, and then you showed me that awesome day in May, and then there was 3 days in a row in July where you just rocked it. Okay. But what about the gaps in time? What about the holes in the wall? What happened on those other days? That's what you need to ask, okay? Now, we do our thing every day live in front of a live audience for 2 hours, Monday through Friday. So people see all of our blemishes. They see, you know, when we get stopped out, it's done right there in the public square. When we get out at break even plus a tick, everybody sees it. When the trade runs to target, everybody sees that too. We don't spend too much time backslapping because we know that on the next trade, because each trade is independent of the previous trade, that we could get stopped out or get out at break even or break even plus one tick. So we are extremely transparent. Okay? We'll never try to convince you that we're the best. We think our indicator set and we think our methodology is very solid. We think that is probably as good as you're going to find. We certainly believe that the tools in our toolbox are more than adequate to get the job done each and every day on a daily basis. But you'll never hear us toot our horn and claim that we're the best. But we will tell you that we do believe we are the most transparent. Okay? We don't hide anything. We don't sweep anything under the rug. We don't fudge on numbers. We just show you the deal, okay? And a lot of times people go, well, I'm thinking about taking your free trial. How much does that cost? And I go, well, but you haven't even taken the free trial yet. And they go, well, yeah, I know, but I'm thinking about taking your free trial, and I'm really interested in knowing, well, how much is it going to cost? And my response is, now the first thing that goes through a person's mind, oh, well, if the price isn't right there, then it must be very high. And in a lot of cases, that's true. But if I tell you that it costs $10,000, you might go, gee, that's a lot. So I'm not even going to bother to take the free trial because there's no way I would spend 10 grand. By the way, it's not 10 grand. If I told you it was $100, you'd go, oh, 100 bucks, that can't have any value. And then you don't take the free trial. And I'll tell you, it's not 100 bucks. Our course and our indicator sets about a third of what many popular schools and vendors charge for training and or indicators. Okay. The thing that you have to ask yourself is, no matter what someone tells you their system is worth, and I went through a lot of systems over the weekend. I kind of got a kick out of looking at some of the advertising copy. The price is right, best price yet, low price guarantee, you know, save 50%. Save 50% of what? See, if an indicator set and a methodology can actually produce profits, okay, that's a good thing. But unless you actually use it, it has zero value to you. It doesn't matter if you paid $100 for it or $100,000 for it. Unless you can actually use it to create profits, it has no value. Okay? Now, our most precious commodity in life tends to be time. And so you're going to have to invest time in every system, whether you take a free trial or buy it for $100 or buy it for $10,000, you're going to have to invest time to determine whether or not that's going to work for you. This is why we want you to come into the free trial. This is why we want you to actually download the indicators and then actually show up in the live trading room so that we can teach you how to use the indicators. And then you get to use our indicators for a full week. Most people on the internet are not going to let you use their tools for an entire week and then allow you to make up your mind whether or not this has value for you. Okay? Now, not everyone will find the same value in what we do as others. Some have obviously found it extremely valuable, and you know, some come take a look and they go, man, maybe that's not what I'm looking for. Those people oftentimes 2-3 months later come back and say, hey, you know what? I sat through your deal, I really didn't pay attention. Now I've gone through some other deals and boy, your deal's looking pretty good. Can I come back and take another look? And you know what we say in most cases? Okay. All right. So if you fall into that camp, if you took the free trial in the past and maybe you weren't attentive, maybe you didn't actually get the indicators downloaded, you didn't get the platform up and running, and you want a second chance, send me an email. Second chance, spell it out, secondchance@cfrn.net. We'll hook you up with another free trial. We expect you to download the indicators. We expect you to show up in the trading room each and every day. Okay, this is the only way it's going to work for you. How many times have you or someone you know bought some get-rich-quick scheme off of the TV from the infomercial? Man, that guy got you so worked up talking about how you were going to work from home and sell products over the internet and never break a sweat, and every morning you're just going to get up in your pajamas and you're going to open your email. And there's going to be all this string of emails from PayPal that say, you got money, you got money, you got money, you got money. And somehow that never happened. Is it because the course wasn't good or didn't have some factual information in it? Maybe in a lot of cases that's probably true. But in many cases, it's because that box that came that had all that stuff in it, by the time it showed up on your desk a week later after you ordered it, the enthusiasm was gone. And as you opened that box and stared inside, you realized that there was actually work involved. And you were like, wow, I don't know if I have time for that today. Here, let me put this on the shelf. And, you know, tomorrow or next week or when I get my vacation, I'm going to go to town. I'm going to buckle down, and pretty soon I'll be checking my email in my pajamas, and I'll be seeing, you got money, you got money, you got money, you got money. And by now, there's 6 inches of dust on that box. So we don't want you to do that. Okay? That's why before we talk dollars and cents, we want you to come into the trading room. We want you to see what we do. We want you to put the indicators on your desktop. We want you to trade with them. Okay? Because if it doesn't have value for you, it would be foolish to spend your money. CFRN.net/apply. We're heading out to Las Vegas, Nevada right now to visit with our good friend, Mr. David Williams from PageTrader.com, and also our good friend, Ms. Robin Dane, the trading coach. So don't go away.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll free 1-866-928-3310 and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, David. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. And good morning, Michael, as well.
Good morning, David.
Have you, did you take up the tuba over the weekend?
No, I didn't take up the tuba over the weekend. tell me why.
You sound like a tuba.
Oh, do I really? I'm like, through my microphone, I sound like a tuba?
You know, yeah, and I only say that because you always sound so crystal clear.
Yeah, I wonder what that is. I wonder if I don't think we made any changes this weekend. Interesting. If you want, I can log out and come back in, and maybe that'll clear it up.
If you want to try that. I just know for me it would be okay, but for some it might be a little distracting.
Okay, I mean, let me vanish for a moment. Right. Well, actually, the way this works is it might not let me back. Well, I can fix it. I'll be back and give me 60 seconds. I'll be right back.
All right.
Thanks.
Sounds good. Okay, let me turn Robin's mic on.
60 seconds, he said.
I thought you had already opened her mic.
Robin?
I got it. Here you go, Robin.
There we go.
There you go. All right. You got an
good
open
morning,
mic.
Good morning, gentlemen. I hope everybody had a great weekend and recharged for this slow day today.
Yeah. Last week, slowest week in 62 years.
Isn't that amazing?
Yep.
You know, it's real important on those slow days that people look at their trading system. They look at their this is the time to really practice and learn while it's slow. I know it can be a little frustrating at times waiting for everything to kick back in, but this too shall pass.
Well, this screen up here is the ES. I'll switch it over to the YM, because those figures I quoted earlier were based on the YM, but it'll show up right here. Okay, guys, so what we were talking about, tightest range in 62 years. This is a daily chart.
That's just amazing.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
8 days.
And then
wow.
We finally broke out a little to the upside on Thursday.
Yep.
Turned right around and put in this little tiny day on Friday, and we're putting in another little tiny day so far on Monday.
It's just really, really, I mean, summertime is typically sluggish, but this is really exceptional. And I think there's so much money on the sidelines waiting for the elections, and people are so uncertain about what's going to happen. They're not spending. The uncertainty level is extremely high, and I should put out a certainty meter for the day, and I would say we're running around 85% uncertain at this point for a whole bunch of things.
There we go. Now I got a label for it. Tightest range in 62 years.
And Dwayne, I've returned. I hope this is a little clearer. If it's not, that's all I can do for today.
There's a little bit of a bass sound, but
interesting.
You know what? Otherwise,
yeah, it's like you're in a closet, or I would say a bass sound is
huh.
The best.
I'm going to try one last thing, because I do want to sound nice and clear, so hold on one second.
Try, if you're away from your microphone a little bit, it sounds a little bit better. It's like in and out that it's bassy, so maybe if you just go a little bit away from your microphone, you'll be fine.
Or we can just call you Count Basie.
Well, Dwayne, this is probably about as good as it's going to get for today.
Well, you know what? You're completely legible.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good. And good morning, Robin.
A writing
term. And good morning to you, David.
Well, I'll tell you what. I was mentioning last week that, and I'm sure it's the same for you, Dwayne, out in the beautiful state of Arizona, that your weather is starting to break. We're starting to see, you know, we're at the end of summer here, so we're starting to see the weather change and the break in the heat. We have definitively lower temperatures coming during this week, for sure. And I did want to mention, I've said this before, this is not unusual behavior, what we're seeing in the market, this kind of quiet behavior, the dog days of summer or whatever. It's very quiet. This is how markets act during this period. I remember being on this radio program for, you know, nearly 7 years, and on a number of those years, we have just, you know, stared at the market mindlessly because there's nothing happening in the middle and late portion of summer.
Right.
So that happens. You know, it's just part of – sometimes there's a trade in there. You know, last Friday we had a really nice trade, and it was a very quiet day. And if you can get it just right once in a while on a really small range day, it's still – you know, it adds up and it counts for what it counts for. But it is small and it is quiet, and that's why I still suggest that the best trade is to take all of your loose change and go to the bank and then put it in the machine. It'll count it up for you. And, you know, you made yourself some money right there. How are you doing?
Last week, David, on the let's see, what day was this? 8:14, I guess. I had put up the S&P chart, daily chart, to show, you know, just how small this little range was here.
But yes.
Did you hear the figures that we were talking about at the beginning of the show? This is the Dow right now. I've got up the Dow daily chart.
Mm-hmm.
These 8 trading sessions, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, that was up through last Wednesday, 8 consecutive trading sessions, the tightest range in 62 years.
Wow, and that's for 8 consecutive days. That's what they're measuring?
Yep.
That's really small. You know, 62 years, most of us aren't 62 years old, so it's a long time.
It's, and so, you know, is it the, you've got on, yeah, some saying, well, it's the quiet before the storm. Others, kind of like myself, leaning towards, you know, this thing's running out of energy. Before we had this breakout to the upside on Thursday, it really started to look kind of like a rounding top formation to me. But I said on the blog, I go, you know, that's dependent if we start closing lower. If we get a higher close, then that's going to negate the whole thing. And that's what happened. And then the guy from Raymond James today comes out, and I've never even heard of this guy, but apparently he's important enough that they quoted him in the paper. And he's calling for all-time highs at 1550.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if he attached a time frame to that, but it made it sound, I think just the way I gleaned over the headlines, he was talking this year.
Well, I'll tell you, our outlook isn't far off from that because I think I've mentioned on the program we're looking for 1475. Bigger. This is longer term, and I don't know necessarily that it very well could occur and probably would occur during this year. We're in a presidential election cycle. The market almost always is bullish coming into that. Under rare occasions, the market will break and start a longer-term downtrend, but it tries to stay up during that period of the election, during and leading up to the election. So I'm kind of with him in the sense that there's a couple of levels that are important to us on the upside. We've mentioned these before, but until they really get moving here, it hasn't been the biggest deal. But both 1477 up to 1515 are very important levels in our work that we believe are going to be reached. They will be reached in spite of any declines and so on. They will be reached. And I know people, and maybe they're listening to the radio program, some of the people that we deal with, some of the institutional people, and also, you know, quote-unquote professional home traders, professional meaning their size, you know, how much they trade in actuality. changes them from the ordinary day traders like myself and others. But a lot of them are anxious to short the S&P if we were to test the 1420, the recent highs level. And my suggestion would be that's okay, but I would want you to be very patient and allow them to test that level, because it would be very easy for the market to move through that if they want to under these conditions. I just happen to believe that it would be. If we were to close this week, if we test 1420 and were to close this week below that, then I think we have a tradable multi-day or week decline coming off of that, and that would be a very decent trade on the downside. On the other hand, if we do get through that level, I believe substantially higher prices are going to come. The 1477 level is just, you know, it's right there. I mean, we 1475, 1477, they would click right up there. So we're at 1413 right now. So I like, you know, in the broader sense, I like the long side of the market. Dwayne, we can day trade the short-term side, but I think the power is on the upside. And a lot of times we can write it off to volatility. We can say, well, it's just low volatility. But you have to remember that low volatility doesn't mean the market necessarily can do what this market did, which was stay up for 8 days in a row with absolutely no concerns on the downside. You know, bad news is the new good news. And I'm not sure what there is out there news-wise that could actually hurt the market right now. I don't know if every possible thing hasn't already been priced into this market. You can say, well, the government's running them up, the government, you know, plunge protection team and all that. Whatever you want to say, let's add it all together along with the millions and millions and millions of investors in the market, and let's just say this. It's really comfortable trading up at these levels. It has no fear on the downside. And even the way we got to where we are, from even recent lows, like the low that was made on June 4th, which itself was a reflected wave bottom, that whole movement that we've made to get up to here in itself, with the choppiness, the back and forth, and then finally this breakout, all of this looks very powerful. And we've said for 3 or 4 weeks here, or whatever it's been on the radio, it's all strong on every time frame. Everything looks strong. There's nothing that looks weak here. So I have nothing to change about that. Globex overnight session made a new high. No big deal, but they got up to 18, and we're reacting off of that. The market looks real strong. So we talked about this last week. We do believe that there is a test, and we've come so close to it, it's almost meaningless to talk about it as a trade necessarily here, but we believe the test of 1420 to 1421 is due this week. And then how they handle that will help us to determine if we want to step in what we do and what we'd like others to do, which is to consider utilizing options in their trades to help profit from things. And we're talking about selling options, which is a more expensive proposition because it requires more margin. That's more money that you would need in the account to do that. And it's a slow boat. It's not exactly like you're, you know, making all your money today, but it does pay off over time. And we really like that method as a backdrop to the trading of stocks or the trading of the futures contracts, et cetera. We've talked about it many times. So yeah, it's a bullish thing. This is the week that if we close this week below 1420, then you'll hear me next week saying, here's the numbers on the downside, here's where we can go, and we can trade to this. If we test and close above 1420, I wouldn't touch the short side with my worst enemy's money. So I think it's very critical that anybody who is thinking about shorting the market because we're very close to important highs gives the market some chance that there will be plenty of room on the downside, gives the market some chance to confirm that before hammering into the market and potentially having to sit through a decent-sized stop, or for some of you who don't use stops, the potential for a wipeout. Because if you don't use stops, you know, then the next thing right after you say, I don't use stops, is a wipeout. you know, there's not a whole lot of clicks in between I don't use stops and wipe out. If you don't use stops, you wipe out at some point. And professional traders do the same thing. You know, the pros we've seen, if you go back to the book Market Wizards, there's probably seven or eight of those people that are no longer in business, in the trading business, not because they retired, but because they are gone because of poor trading practices. They may have a very deep insight into the market, and that's necessary to have your edge. But then trading the market and how you interact with the market is its own skill. And in, even with professionals, they get carried away with their idea of what the market's going to do, and then the market doesn't do that, and they add to their position or they let it run, et cetera. Again, the ideology, it's almost like politics. When the ideology becomes so powerful that it overrides reality, then you, that's not a good way to trade. The ideology in trading is you have an insight, you have a edge in the market, and you put that edge to work. And when the edge is confirmed by further price action, you can add to it. There's all kinds of beautiful things you can do with your edge. When the edge doesn't work and the market says, well, wait a minute, there's something else working here that I couldn't read, or my insight didn't include that, and now it's moving in this direction, then you stop yourself out with a reasonable loss. And then you wait for, you either go in that direction if your methodology allows you to, or you do nothing and you wait for the next setup. But yeah, a lot of professional traders have allowed their own methodology to lose its edge by removing one of the most powerful edges, which is that you can get out in a situation where in many cases in other investments of different kinds, you can't get out. You know, for those of you who bought a house, you know, you couldn't just get out, right? You can't just, you know, and the reason you can't get out is because there's not a real liquid market for you to do so. Well, in the markets, you can do that. And so that constitutes an edge. So you want to use that edge along with everything else that you have. So anyway, your fellow Duane that you mentioned that sees it going up high, I am not disagreeing with that, although I don't necessarily have a time frame for it. I don't. I wouldn't discount it happening this year, A, and B, we're at a critical juncture for us on the upside on the weekly chart this week. So normally for us, the market would go test the 1420-21 level, and it's during that test, and then we'll all talk about it on the radio program here and be able to maybe put something together with that, because we're right there. I mean, we did 18 on the overnight. You know, is 18 close enough to 20 to say it's done? For me, no, because this is a very unusual thing that the market did recently with getting up here, and normally they would test that number. I would expect a good test of that 1420 or exceeding it and closing above it. So I guess that was a long-winded way of saying I agree with your guy. Okay. You want long-winded answers, you come to me.
All right.
Okay. Just say, where's that guy with the long-winded answers? So did you want to say anything else, Duane, about any of that? Or
no, David. I think I've said it all.
Oh, you have said it all. Okay.
Tightest range in 62 years, and overnight we hit our zone up at 18, came down this morning, hit our zone at 1410/11, and then over the next 2 hours ran back up to 1415, which appears to be pretty good resistance right now. Mm-hmm. So based on the flow, all we can expect now until something changes is a revisit of 1410/1411.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the volatility, the diminished volatility brings these ranges back together. You know, these numbers, the distances between, you know, 10 and 18, that's 8 points, between 18 and 15 or 14, whatever. You know, these ranges, the zones, the support and resistance shrinks down because volatility has reduced dramatically. And at some point here, volatility is cyclical as well. And we're at that point, by the way, in our work. As I mentioned, in fact, let me just double check that I'm saying this correctly. Give me just a minute here, because we have, there's a particular you know, for lack of a better term, set up here. And that had the week of August 13th, which we talked about. That would normally be a very important reversal for the market. However, because they did some unusual things getting up here, that gives the market kind of an extra potential edge to express itself. You know, that's why I expect the 20 and even higher tested this week, and I would be cautious on the short side. But we're now in the 1 week late for this particular reversal, which would normally have a pretty good reversal. The market has shown no indication yet of any of that, and that's why I'm, like I always do, you know, there's plenty of room on the downside. I wouldn't step in front of this just yet because of the nature of how they got here. To some people, it might not matter, and there's very valid techniques where it wouldn't matter how they got there. But in this particular approach, how they get to a number, I would say is equally as important as the fact that they got to the number. You know, the number is the thing. They get to the number and you go, okay, that's important. But how they get there is also important. If they, in our work, invert or do other things to get to that number, that can be very useful information. And so in our case, it's useful in the sense of telling us to be cautious here, especially until I see a further test or attempt at 20 or higher during the week. And I don't think 18 really does it. It is a new high on the week, but I'd like to see a little more before I take any action up here.
Could you define how they get to there, some of the ways that they could get there?
Yeah, the market has sure. The market doesn't move in a straight line on a particular time frame. If you looked at a weekly chart, it looks like on a weekly chart the market moved in a straight line starting from the week of July 23rd. Mm-hmm. You have this big week, another week, another week, another week, and every week has, it's not exactly a straight line, but it looks very orderly, a nice move up. However, if you were to take that same period of time on a shorter time frame, like a daily chart, you'd see a lot of different types of movement inside the larger movement. Mm-hmm. The larger movement doesn't display or reveal what might have been unusual movement inside. So you're looking at one time frame, and it's almost like looking at a cave from the outside. You see the caves, the shape of the cave, etc., but you haven't been in the cave yet to see what's inside of it. So the weekly chart is the outside of the cave. The daily chart in this particular case might be the inside of the cave, and you can see that the market has done certain things in getting to these numbers. A good example would be in our work with spatial relationship forecasting and in reflected wave, but primarily in spatial relationship stuff, the market will often have a natural level that it is going to go to, a natural number that's due on a particular date. And if the market acts a certain way and inverts, it actually means the market needs to go and complete a completely different number, one that wouldn't normally be associated with that date, but through an inversion, it now is, and you can know that number in advance. If a market gets to critical levels through a series of inversions or through an inversion, that means something different than if it got to that level doing its normal movement, which would be first to pull back to this natural level and then to move up from here. It actually means that there's a much larger force. One of the things it means is that there's the potential for a much larger force at work behind the scenes of this whole move. If that didn't happen, I would be much more apt to say things like, hey, we're very close to an old high. Mm-hmm. Let's short that high because I like the way we got here. Mm-hmm. But if with the way we got here had inversions and flipovers and things, those types of behaviors often, not always, but often, more often than not, indicate larger forces at work. And so I'm more cautious to do that. I hope that explains it. Mm-hmm. But how they get there, definitely, at least in our approach, is definitely more equally as important as the fact that they get there. Because most people are just looking at the horse race and saying, okay, they reached this number. And there you are. So,
do you find that your indicators are very not modified, but that they react very strongly to the volume in the market?
Well, you know, you're asking a good question, and because I am long-winded, I could really go on and on about that, but I won't. I'll simply say that volume is the third dimension of the market, the depth of participation.
Okay.
And that volume is important, and it has a number of things in it that can be used to potentially forecast future movement.
Mm-hmm.
So volume is important to us. You don't hear us talk a lot about volume. I think actually you would hear maybe Michael talk more about volume. You know, Dwayne and Michael maybe perhaps talk more about volume than we ever do. But volume is important, and it does have a relationship to the other two dimensions. And that's why it's important, by the way.
And the other two dimensions?
The other two dimensions would be time. The fact that the market, you know, if I come over, you know, you come to the restaurant while I'm eating there, in order for you and I to, you know, have a hug or shake our hands, you know, you have to move through space, and that movement requires time. So mm-hmm. you would agree that the movement through space requires time. You can see there's a relationship there. In order for you to move through space, you have to utilize, use up, burn up time. And so, yes, I actually threw myself off of that. What was the question there? Because I was about to hit the point.
The one and two.
Oh, the one and two. So, yeah, the one and two is time, and in this particular case, space, you know, the fact that you move through space. In the market, we consider space the dimension, but for practical purposes, price is that dimension. Price isn't a dimension, obviously. Price is price. It's a number. And in order for the market to go from 1 to 100, it has to go through a form of mathematical space.
Mm-hmm.
So space is the actual dimension. But price, for lack, you know, just for practical terms, you can say the three dimensions are time, price, and volume.
Mm-hmm.
Those three things, in the same way that movement through space is connected to time, volume is connected to them as well. So
right.
all those three things have a relationship. If they had no relationship, then it really would be meaningless to try to connect them up and say, and then I would be more on the side of the random walkers, people who believe that you know, the market is essentially a random movement. It's a random series of things where the market, we had the author, Burton McHale on last week, and he very nicely described his belief system about the market, but he also allowed, this is something that I really liked about what he said, he allowed for the possibility of other things to be true that he had not investigated yet, and in that way he had agreed that he had softened his position, where at one point he might have been of the mind to say, which is what he said in his original book, this is just the way it is. But there's more than one way to skin a cat, because as we all talked last week, the efficiency of markets has increased dramatically. The efficiency meaning from the moment that information becomes available to the moment that it turns into price movement. That's the efficiency of markets. How efficient is a market is a measurement of how fast new information gets converted into price movement. Nowadays, because of computers, new information gets converted into price movement at an astonishing fast pace, much, much faster than just, say, 15 years ago. So the efficiency of markets has gone up dramatically, and yet that hasn't made any difference to, in our case, to the ability for this particular technique to make forecasts about a future movement. So obviously, market efficiency by itself doesn't get to call all the shots. And my argument with the academics is that's their argument. Their argument is that market efficiency proves that you can't make a dime in the markets, number one, because the market acts too quickly for you to be able to take advantage of that movement. The market efficiency is too great. And then they extrapolate that into saying, and therefore the market is also random, because you would have to know what all these other people are thinking and doing in order to you know, do something. That's like saying the ocean is... you know, here's a little spot in the ocean right here. Let's just take a little cube of ocean water, and you could say, see all these little things floating in here? That's completely random. There's no way you could know what's going to float through this little cube of water at any time. And from the perspective of the cube of water, that's true. However, if you step back and you knew that that cube of water was in an ocean, and that seasonally that ocean has water that comes through at such and such a rate, you know, from some, you know, whatever it is, the water movement occurs, things that we know, then that little cube of water, what you can know about that little cube of water changes dramatically, because you know something about the bigger container of that cube of water. And so my belief is that the market is very similar in as much as that it exists on several levels, and that if you view it from one level, it may be very true that it is random from that level. And so it would be very uncertain as to what's going to happen, but it might be very certain from viewed the same piece of information viewed from a different higher level. It might be very certain what is going to happen. So certainty has to do with what level you're viewing it from. And science has already found out that if you view things from the atomic, from, you know, above, you know, the world that we live in, Newtonian, and you move down, you go to higher and higher levels, you get to find out more and more about how the thing works, the nature of the thing. That's the essence of technical analysis, is that we're looking at the whole picture. We're trying to get more of the whole picture in there and viewing it from different levels, because the truth, or at least high probabilities, might be apparent from time to time where they're not apparent from lower levels. And so our approach, this particular one approach, where we're tying together the three-dimensionality, is a way of stating from one-dimensional view of the market, where you're just looking price going up and down, yes, you might have a great deal of time, and it might trouble, you know, forecasting from that. And some people, there's many methods that utilize and treat just pure price movement. But when you get into adding in the other dimensions, there's a whole nother connectivity that you can see, and there's much more higher probabilities for market movement. And some of the larger and smaller forecasts that we've made on this radio program have been a complete demonstration of that technique. You know, the latest was, I mean, and a big one with latest was the crude oil one in May for the crash in crude in May. And, you know, a lot of professionals were not expecting that. From their perspective, they couldn't see it coming. But if they knew, there's nothing mystical, if they knew this other perspective, they could see, and they understood the relationship, the odds were very, very high that the market would have to crash in the month of May. There you are. So, and it did. So there's a lot more to the market than simple market efficiency. And I think where a lot of the academics went wrong is they believed in the idea, again, that if the conversion speed from new knowledge to price movement gets too small, no one can make a dime in the market, and that ergo the markets are random, there's no way you could know all that information, et cetera, et cetera. So that's where they went. I think many academics that were on that side, they may not have changed their mind, but they do allow now, very much like Burton allowed us and said, he does allow for the fact that there may be other techniques that he's not investigated, and that there's a real possibility that there's other truths about the market outside of, but including, market efficiency. So, there you are.
Sounds good.
Well, there you are. See, you get me on a long-winded thing. You never get. I get people are all asleep at the time I'm done. There you are. But it's been my whole thing. Ever for the anybody that's new, for me, and just, you know how the first thing you do something, you know, if you play basketball, you play chess, sometimes the very, very first impression you have is something that sticks with you for a long, long period of time. And my very, very first impression of markets were that it seemed like they were purposeful, that there was something that they were satisfying when they went to certain levels and stuff, that it just didn't seem random. That wasn't something I conjured up. That's just the first impression I had. And then I spent the next 22 years of my life leading up till Monday, August 20th, whatever today is, to continue that study and to continue putting to use those ideas, just like any trader does, to try to make turn that idea into money in the markets, into decent trades. I don't like to talk a lot about the money side. I really rather prefer to say into high probability trading opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And you take those as far as you can. So, So there you are. And while we've been talking, the market has remained very quiet. Dwayne, I was going to mention to you also, there's a possibility that I may be in California this week, still be able to do the radio program.
Okay.
If I do go out there, I just want to let everybody know why I'm going. So go ahead and ask me, why are you going to California, Dave?
David, why are you going to California?
Well, Dwayne, it's a really silly reason why I'm going to California. And you know, you say, you know, you guys are transparent. Well, I'm pretty transparent as well. I'm going to California, to Santa Monica, to go drive a car that's half made in China and half made in America called the Coda electric car. You spell that C-O-D-A. Coda, like, is a musical term which denotes the ending of one passage and the beginning of another. And so I've been watching and reading on it, and do I want one? Probably not. But do I want to drive it? Yeah, I do. I want to see what this company is all about.
Why is it that you want to drive it?
I didn't quite hear you, Jane.
Why is it that you want to drive it?
Because I'm a car nut and need to go to a professional, get professional help.
What about the Ford Energy? I haven't heard you talk about that.
Which Energy?
The Ford, it's called Energy.
I'm not too aware of that, but Ford itself does have a new electric car out that's slowly being rolled out, and that's their Ford Fusion or Ford Focus Electric, which looks like a pretty decent car. And this Coda, Dwayne's got it up right here, and if you can turn it around and see it from the side, doesn't that look like a car from like it's circa 2000? That's because it is a car from circa 2000. It actually is the body of like a Mitsubishi something, and it's from like the year 2000. They take that body, manufactured in China, and they bring it out here, and this company, Coda, designed the powertrain for it. And the powertrain is very much like the Tesla powertrain, in as much as the battery is on the bottom of the car, flat at the base of it. And the car actually has a true range exceeding 100 miles on pure battery. If you drive it lightly, normally in traffic without a lot of hot rodding, it can get 115 to 120 miles on a single charge. That's really good. Doesn't that look like an older style, like 2000 mm-hmm. model? You know, it doesn't look like today's cars. It just looks more like kind of an older thing. So,
Electrical connections and the places where they charge these, are those going to be standardized?
They are going to be standardized. Tesla has its own, the company Tesla that we talk about a lot. Right. They have their own, and they're hoping that theirs will become the standard. But right now, there is a standard already for these connections to the car. And so this is a car that has, you know, the basics to it. It's like navigation, you know, a few other little things in there, but it's not fully the kind of car. If you bought a brand new 2012 something, it would have a lot more a lot more connectivity and things. But it has what it has, and if you want an electric car that can drive over 100 miles in a day, this is that car. I've read up on it, and I appreciate you showing that, Dwayne. This company is backed by a pretty big company, and they're trying their best to get these out there on the road. And so because of my disorder, I need to drive to California to drive that car. And I've been thinking about it for a long time, so I don't want you to think that I just jump up and do it the moment I think about it. I've been thinking about it for months, and I suddenly decided the market's really slow. I'm not doing much in the markets right now. This would probably be a good week for me to zip over there and do that.
You going to drive?
Yes, I would drive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So there you are. Now, is that transparent, Dwayne?
That's very transparent.
See, I could have said something like, well, important business. You know, I've got important business in California. But the truth of the matter is I'm a car nut, and I'm going to go drive this car and stay in Santa Monica. So there you are.
I think you're going to have some great weather, too.
It is. And you know what? I do feel like I'd like to get into California a little bit, just get some nice weather over there because it is so beautiful in California. Okay, so let's see. If there's nothing else, you don't need any more of my transparency, let's move on. Let's take a quick look around. A lot of markets are quiet, so let's see how they play it out. Gold moving a little bit higher. Nothing new to add to this except that I like the idea of if the market starts to break out on the upside, I like the idea. I won't buy any old breakout, but I would be likely to buy. I'm already in gold, but I would be likely to buy any breakout above either the 1623 to 25 level or, worst case, above 1628. I would be willing to buy any breakout on any kind of method that you confirm breakouts on. You could use any number of things to get into that for a move up. Because as I talked about originally, the bottom that we had forecast for the week of August 6th at a price that we forecast would be 1586, we believe that the market would have a move potentially up to 1647 or higher. We're now at 16, basically 20. So I like the idea of the breakout, and I like the idea of being long into the 47 number and then book something prior to 47, you know, maybe 44 to 45 area, book something, you know, first we have the breakout, it's confirmed, we're in, or you're in, you book something at or near 47, you hold the remainder and you trend follow that up using any trend following method you care to use, whether it's just a simple moving average or, you know, you name it, whatever it is, go ahead and use that and hold on for the potential for substantially higher prices. Only if the market breaks out. I prefer that here because the market is in a wedge type of formation and I want to see that. But because we went through the week of August 6th and the 1 week late without the market retesting 1586, the original forecast downside target, that means to me that from this point forward, any breakout would have to go to 1647 or higher. Ain't no two gosh darn ways about it. There you are. So, any questions on that? Or, Robin, you want to comment on that at all? Or I don't know,
Robin,
if Robin's still with us.
Sorry. my thing was up. No, I'm fine. That's good.
He was asking you if you had
okay.
any comments.
So that's on gold. Yeah.
I take that as a no. All right.
I take that as a no as well. Okay. All right, let's move on. We're good like that. We both can, you know, we both have that. Okay, look at, now this is interesting. So Facebook today, you know, this is just something we all watch. Nobody's trading this. So for the people that are new, we're not, neither of us, I don't know that Dwayne or anybody else is in this. We're certainly not. But Facebook has had a good rebound today, taking back essentially all of the downside that occurred on Friday. So,
that's
I don't know
only
that that's
happened,
big and important.
That's only happened just in the last possibly hour or so.
Okay.
Because earlier today it hit an all-time new low.
Yes, it did earlier today,
in fact,
didn't it?
Let's do this. Let's go stock charts. And we'll go to Facebook. Okay. See, can we get anything smaller than a daily? Nope, not on these charts. Okay. So it hit an all-time new low today, and now it has bounced, and we're currently trading. What are we trading at? What do you show for the current price? $19.95?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bounce of like a dollar. That's pretty substantial.
That is. It's an interesting reversal here. We'll see what they do with it. Let me just take a quick look at it here. We don't make any real calls on this market, but technically, you know, the market's in a downtrend, and we're only addressing this market because it's a new IPO. Everybody knows or has Facebook, and we're watching what they do. So we'll wait and see if there's any other action on that. Let's move on. Dwayne, anything else on Facebook, or are you ready to go on?
No. We had commented earlier that today it hit a new low and that the bankers cashed in a second time, and we went through a rather lengthy explanation of how that works and mm-hmm. how they did it. I'm just curious if there was any news of any kind out. Let's just...
Maybe Mark Zuckerberg got his own Facebook account.
Well, that actually...
I don't know if he's on there.
That actually wouldn't be news. Yeah, he actually is.
Okay. See,
right here, the news. Facebook slides to all-time low. Facebook stock slid to an all-time low of 1875 Monday morning. And so, no, there's no news yet as to why we have the bump in price. So
okay.
We'll hear about it later today if there is something, or, you know, maybe it's just a bounce.
Yeah. Okay, real quick over to the U.S. Treasury bond market. Treasury bond market had a pretty good decline here. The highs that we've made up at 153 have been corrected. That means that, you know, in a sense, the market was too high, not too high. It just was high. And now another force comes in and corrects that. And we've made a low here recently of 145. That's a pretty good slide on a basis points, you know, basis, 153 down to 145. Very, very high market. The interest rates were low as they've been in 50-plus years. I mean, that gives you an idea of the scope of this. I mentioned last week that this week, the week of August 20th, is the next important weekly bottom for this market. This bottom, I think, is now going to be very important because since they did break some previous lows and they sort of did a bigger thing here on the downside, this will tell us a lot more about the overall condition of the bond market. Some people believe that the government, you know, absolutely and directly controls the interest rate to the extent that, you know, pretty much wherever this thing goes, that's where they meant it to go. Whether that's true or not and whether they meant it to go down, I don't think the government's quite all so powerful, et cetera. But be that as it may, this bottom will, in our estimation, be the bottom for the week of August 13th, August 20th, this week, is going to probably end up being a very key bottom in the current longer-term advance of the U.S. Treasury bond market. So we like the idea of waiting for later in the week if you're a Treasury bond trader or an option seller, buyer, and then let the market confirm, and then we would have a multi-week advance, which means interest rates would continue to stay where they are or drop lower. Great time to refinance your life if you are financing your life. Let's see. The euro, I don't have anything to add on. We have the one-month late bottom that we've been talking about for a long time, the month of July. Euro's been very quiet, so nothing to add to that. You'll hear me say these same words over and over again. Silver is starting to move up, and I think there's some bullish sentiment that I would expect to be expressed in silver. I kind of leaning on the longer side. I don't have a lot to add other than that, no real big forecast or anything, but they are starting to move up and maybe showing some early signs of what gold is going to do.
Hey, Bert, what month are we in silver?
Did you ask Bert or are you asking me?
Either one.
Oh, okay. Let's see. I'm in September, but Bert might be telling us something different. So, is Bert there?
He was a minute ago.
Okay.
All right, well, here's September.
Okay, thanks. With regard to crude oil, originally we had forecast for crude to crash in the month of May, and that would mean that May would technically be a bottom. The bottom came a month late in June at lower prices, and we're now in our second month off of that bottom. It's funny, isn't it, how gasoline prices respond much more quickly on the upside when the market rallies than it does on the downside. So, and there are some real reasons for that. I won't go into them now, but we've talked about them before. And, you know, everybody's so fast to jump to the conclusion that we're all getting taken, you know, because when it goes down, prices really don't go down that fast. But when, boy, any little blip up and the gas station prices go up. And maybe we are all just being taken. Maybe we're just being taken on a ride. Some people just believe that as a part of their nature. It's part of their disappointment in life or whatever that, you know, they've decided that everything is a scam, that we're all being taken all the time. But there's not a lot of intelligence in that because in the real world, there are other forces at work other than we're getting screwed. as an example, and I won't go into the big details, but the people who own gas stations have to purchase their gasoline supplies 6, 8, 12, 15, 24 months in advance. So in a very real way, they have to hedge like a farmer does. In other words, they don't know where the prices are going to be, and they have to literally kind of forecast in order to be able to keep profitable. So there's really a time and a place where a gas station might have a gas, you know, price, but he's losing money on every one of those gallons because he had to buy those in advance, and the price that he bought it was later the price had changed enough so that he paid too much for it, and now it's in the ground in his tanks, and he has to sell it at that price. So these guys have a job to do. They have to figure out what the markets are doing, and they also sometimes will hedge themselves against the future, the same way that a farmer, if you know how farmers will do that, you know, let's say soybeans are really high, and we don't have to say that because they actually are really high, and he says, you know what, this is really great, but the season for selling them is still 3 months away, let's just say, and I don't know where prices are going to be then. This is good enough. If we book this, if we could book this right now, we would have a great year. And so the way that they do that is, obviously, the stuff's still on the ground. They still have to harvest it and put it in the silos and then get it to the market. So right now what they're going to do is they're going to go sell. If he's happy with the price right now and says, we want to have our whole crop sold at this price, he'll go out and sell futures contracts against his per bushel expected harvest. And that means that from now on, if the prices continue to go higher, his soybean market, you know, the underlying crop, that goes up in price for him, but because he's short futures contracts, he's now losing an equal amount of money by those futures contracts being sold short. But he's okay with that. And then if the market goes down for soybeans, the soybean market itself, the underlying assets going down, then those future contracts, which he's short, are now going up an equal amount. So in the end, he's locked in his profit. No matter what happens to this crop, he is going to get so much per bushel or however they measure it because he has those future contracts hedging him. Well, he has to figure out when to do that and all that. And there's whole businesses and advisory services out there to help farmers put those types of hedges on. Well, the gas station guy has to do the same thing. And so one of the reasons that the actual signage at gas stations changes and goes up and down is because he's trying to deal with that, and he's trying to make sure he can't just run in and just say, let's just raise all our prices because higher prices are better, because of a pesky little thing called competition. If people aren't going to come to your station unless your price is reasonably in line with other stations.
Yeah, and in any major city, well, unless you live out in the country, you never see one gas station.
That's true. Like, you
know, there's always one on the opposing corner.
Right, right. And, there's always an exception, no doubt about it. And in the rural areas, that there very well might be an exception where they can take advantage of you. But my point is simply that there's a lot more going on in that, the whole issue that gas prices go up and they go down. They did go down fairly substantially. You have to give them credit. They were over $4.50. In some places in California, they were $5.
Kevin said last night it was over $5 in Beverly Hills.
Yes. And that's partly because the futures market went from a low of $77 all the way till just recently up to $96. So, you know, 96 minus 77, that's a 19-point move in the futures market, which represents an increase of 25% in just 2 months. So, yeah, the gas prices have gone back up. But anyway, my point is just that there's other factors involved in the way these prices move up and down. So with regard to the crude oil market, they're, you know, still looking pretty good here on the upside. And I think we have something that is going to be important coming up in this month. Hold on here. Let me get back over to crude. Oh, I'm sorry. I lost my place here. But my point was that there is the month of August is important to us. I think I've mentioned this before. On the upside here. So we may have a roadmap for crude in the month of August. That's all. And we'll talk about that as we get a little closer to it. Okay, so finally, and then Tesla. I don't have a lot to add on that. You know, they're moving back and forth inside of a range here. I will say this, that as I mentioned last week, the date of August 22nd on Tesla is important. If Tesla is testing the $29.03 level on or near that date, which would be, that's August 22nd, so tomorrow is one day early. If they test that price and close above that price, or worst case, close above $28.81, this is in the stock Tesla, TSLA, then I like the idea of you buying this stock. And especially if what I just said happens, if we get into those price ranges into August 21st or August 22nd, that's a very important date for those price levels in this particular market. They're attempting lower now. Today we're trading at 29.41. This would be a longer-term trade. It wouldn't be a day trade, obviously, but we'll talk about this as we get into it. I mentioned last week the date of August 22nd for the stock for a potential bottom. So I want to let that play out, and then we'll do something with that.
Vince had a question. Did you say a few weeks back that the euro had a reflected wave top due for August 27th?
Well, the biggest thing we have, hold on, the biggest thing right now, and I'll go back in a minute, the biggest thing right now is the monthly bottom, which came 1 month late in July. Now let's go back, and I'm sorry, what date was he referring to?
August,
did he say July 27th?
August 27th.
No, August 27th.
August 27th. Give me a minute here with that.
That would be next.
Because I don't do a lot on the euro, so I'm wondering, or did he mean maybe the week of August 22nd? And see, I don't write down everything that I say, so...
Did David say a few weeks back that the euro had a reflected wave top due for August 27th? That's the question.
Let me look around. Yeah, that's the question. One moment for important... Actually, I do see something here that somewhere in the last 2 weeks, we may have noted the day of August 27th, but even as I'm looking at this, the date actually is the actual date is September 3rd, but this is a Friday-Monday combination. The Friday is the 27th of August. Monday is September 3rd. I would have to, you know, I don't know exactly how and what I said and where what I was looking at, but I do see something important on that date right now. Maybe perhaps that was the beginning step for or set up for a roadmap in euro, but the euro has made a new low recently, back down at 120.51. So I'm not sure of the how important that is. I will say, and maybe we can watch this, that this is more general than I like to be, but if by September 3rd, if the euro had attempted to retest 120.87, if it did retest that at or near that level into September 3rd or August 27th, again, Friday, Monday, plus or minus one day, that would be important potential buying territory. I haven't done a lot of work on the euro except for the just the reflected wave bottom that we've talked about. And I can almost see why I would have been talking about the date for a high, but the market has done something subsequent to then. They, first of all, never gave a buy signal. They put in a one-month late bottom, and maybe that's why I'm hesitant to say anything, because they did go into the one-month late period on reflected wave without giving any buy signal. I'm not sure what date I gave that out. So I'm sorry if that's not clear enough, but one thing I can say is that I do still like the idea of watching this market carefully into the Friday, August 27th, September 3rd, Monday. And if we are making a low on that date, there definitely is a trade, I think, doable in there. So I hope it's a partial answer. We'll wait and see how that comes up. Those, the end of August, there's a number of things happening in a number of different markets.
Okay. Jim asked, do you have a price target or a time target for natural gas?
Let me get over to natural gas real quick. Actually, you know, a good friend of mine and I were looking at natural gas over the weekend, and we were talking about it this morning, and I'm not exactly sure. We saw something that we thought was important that looked potentially bearish to us short term. Let me find the chart of it here. And by the way, for those of you that know, I don't have a forecast for every single market on every single day. I'm only looking for the really good, easy setups that I can very confidently say on the radio to however many people are listening. So sometimes there'll be a date or some question that you answer, and we just don't, you know, we just don't have anything on it right now. Natural gas is firming up today, and they had to break a level in order for us to trade it down, and they didn't. They simply retested the last 3 days' lows. I don't think I have anything that I would touch on natural gas just right now. So, I'm going to wait on natural gas before we have something. We just don't have enough, something that I would be, interested in verbalizing yet and taking advantage of.
Earlier when you were talking about the three dimensions of the market, one of our guys from the UK, Will, I believe it was, you had sent me an offline message about the three dimensions or the four dimensions of the market. David covered that earlier, so yeah. I didn't bring up your name because we got into the discussion before I had a chance to get to your question. So I think he covered exactly what you had asked, why it was, because you thought it was four dimensions instead of three, but David covered today the three being time, space, and participation and or volume. But Richard has a question here that says, for volume, David, is it the total volume for that day that you use or some part of that number?
No, it's the same as, that would be like asking the question, nothing wrong with the question, by the way. It's like the same as asking the question, would you use anything, any of those things on a single day? You use it on any number of time frames that you want to validate the connection. As an example, if it's a day trade, many times on this program, we've been on, you know, for 7 years, and many times on the program, we'll say something like, okay, the market's right now, as we're talking, it's quiet, the market's at, you know, let's say it's at, you know, 1350. Let's just say it's a number. And then we'll say something like, listen, it actually, in the next hour, it needs to be up at 1356, and it's quiet today, but if you want, you can buy the market for the run-up into 1356. Well, and then we're talking on the show, and then an hour goes by, and later, lo and behold, they've moved up to 1356. Okay, so that's a smaller time frame version where I'm simply taking volume, time, and space, price, and putting that together to locate that specific spot that the market would want to go to, a high probability that the market would go there. Remember, it isn't magic, but it looks like magic. No, it isn't magic, but it is a very high probability that the market will tend to do that. So we're looking at that time frame. But the volume was that the volume that we were using to be the third dimension in that was short-term volume. It was exactly what you're asking. It was right now, right in this little place. Then we might step out to make a larger forecast on a daily chart and say, you know, on such and such a date, this would be the place that the market would be at, and that would be using volume on the larger time frame. And so I hope that answers your question. It is the total volume. We're looking at the whole picture for that particular time frame, whether it's a small time frame, short-term time frame, or a larger time frame, et cetera. And remember, this isn't arbitrary, the idea that the thing is in three dimensions. It just was something that always was in the back of my mind, the idea that there isn't anything that you can bring to me that isn't in three dimensions. You know, Dwayne once said on the radio, well, you know, he wasn't saying this. He just brought it up. He goes, well, what about my thoughts? Well, your thoughts are in three dimensions because they're measurable by electrical activity. And that's in three dimensions, ohms, watts, and voltage, or whatever the three dimensions are. I might not have it correct there. Current, what are the three dimensions of electricity? Current, voltage, and ohms, or resistance. And all three of those are present in every electrical display. Anything that is in the realm, you know, electricity is a manifestation. It's a thing. It has its own nature. But no matter what thing you look at, it always has three dimensions to it. So the markets are the same. They have three dimensions. everything else is in three dimensions. Even if it's a man-made thing, it ends up in three dimensions. And so therefore, it just struck me that you would have to be able to look at those to maybe get some better insights into why the market does what it does. The fellow that asked the question asked about fourth dimension. I don't know about the fourth. I mean, I know about the fourth dimension, but I don't literally know about the fourth dimension. And there is a book out by an author named Bradley Cowan who surmises that, you know, there are four dimensions to the movement of the markets, and that's fair enough. But the three that are very well known and that everything seems quite comfortable being in without having to surmise are the three dimensions that we all live in. So just keep that in mind. That's why that's important to me, is because everything is in three dimensions. And I've never had a person come up to me and said, hey, Dave, I was walking to the store the other day and I found this really interesting little two-dimensional object. Check this out. Look, I got it in my pocket right here. You know, that's not going to happen. No matter what you show me, it's going to be in three dimensions. And so, therefore, that three-dimensionality is part of indexes, commodities, everything else. It makes sense. It's not mystical. I'm not trying to make it mystical. It is just simply that it exists in three dimensions like everything else does. I got a call late last night at 2 in the morning. Somebody said, hey, man, I found this one-and-a-half-dimensional object. You got to come over right now. You know, I never get that call. I'd like to. Okay, real quick, one last thing. Soybeans also, we had a reflected wave top forecast for August 11th or August 13th. This was a Friday, Monday. Soybeans made the top one day early, sold off, and then now is breaking out to the upside. This is really a remarkably powerful market that continues to attempt to break to new highs. And I think what did we have on this? Let me just double check. We had talked about, I'm sorry, I don't have everything up. We talked about the last quarter of this year being a top for this market. So it would make sense. The market, you know, has its pullbacks, daily tops and bottoms, but it's continuing to attempt higher because the last quarter of this year would normally mark an important top for this very unusually bullish soybean market. And for people who are farmers, I would seriously consider getting an expert. We're not licensed to do this, and I can only say the same thing to everybody. So please, you know, understand that we can't. I would love to help you, but there's a really good reason that people need to have these licenses, like Bert Schlichter from Daniels Trading and, you know, these Series 7s, et cetera. I would really want to encourage people who have farms to get an expert, somebody who can help you if you haven't already considered it. Obviously, you must have already considered hedging at this point, starting a hedge at this point to lock in these gains. So, I don't know.
Yeah, these are all-time highs up here.
Yeah, these are remarkable things, and people already know that. I mean, they would know to do that. They don't need me to tell them, but if you haven't gotten it done, get it done, because you could. This is going to be one of those crops that could make your next 2 years, you know, look really good or whatever. So there you are, Duane. We cover a lot of ground. S&P, pretty darn quiet.
Yeah, go back and have a look here on the hourly chart, and we'll see that we ran from support right up here to resistance, and we said it looked like the next road to travel would be back down, test the support again, and so far, that's what's happening.
They're trying.
We could see a little turn here, but it's not happening yet. So for now, we're just at 1410, 1411, probably you should be interested in potentially being long there. That might provide some good support for another bounce back up. And if it bounces back out of that level a second time, then we might get a chance to revisit these overnight highs. But keep in mind, these highs up here, these are highs that haven't been seen since March 30th of last year. This was the March 30th of this year, right here, 1413. So we made it 5 points above. We broke out. We had a double top last week. We broke out 5 points to the upside above that double top, and now we're back. We're right at it. We're sitting at 1413.
I do want to mention something else that back earlier this year when we talked about real estate and the real estate bottom, you know, all of these markets, including real estate, they all have their obviously the price is very important, but one of the reasons that we got excited about real estate was the same idea that we've discussed on the program so many times, is that I was able to get a chart of prices. Now, real estate is different than the stock market. It's a very, you know, it's a slow-moving thing, and the way they record the prices, I mean, this wasn't real super precision work because of the way they record them. I mean, every time a house trades, there's not a blip on the chart. It's very different. But, you know, one of the things you might want to consider, and others have confirmed this, the author, Burton McKeel, that was on last week, himself has put out something. We weren't aware of this, but he had put out something about, you know, he thinks real estate is a great buy right now. And I do encourage everybody I talk to consider that, that it really, you could buy new homes, which right now I believe that new is better because they're building them to compete with the flood of houses that are available through foreclosure and short sales, and you get an awful lot with a new home. But there's nothing wrong with purchasing an older home and simply just having some of the additional maintenance costs. Maybe it's not as efficient as, you know, and your power bill's a little higher, whatever, but you have a new home. You have a home, and you can do something with that. I had forecast in February that the prices that we saw, the low we saw in October, that we would not see for 50 years. And I realize many of us are not going to be here for 50 years, but the point is that I believe the market had bottomed and in last October, and that as best as I can see it, and I'm not a professional realtor or anything like that, that we're just not going to see those prices ever again. Not ever, ever, but ever for a really practical long period of time, like 50 years. So pricing in housing is likely to go up, sideways to up, for the rest of many of our lives. So that's why I think it's very important for you to consider that as a as an investment. You know, if you want it, you better do your homework, of course, and double check. It's just some guy on the radio saying that. But I believed it enough to invest in real estate in Las Vegas because of that, and many other people that I know are coming around. And I think in the last quarter, the stats were something like 5% increase. I mean, it was a big increase, the largest increase they've seen in a long time. Somebody might know the number in the housing market. And that's a trade. These are trades. You know, they're just a different kind of trade, but check it out. I mean, it might be something that if you were considering doing that, I would really ask you to consider that seriously. You could find yourself in a very good position years down the road, and you have a home that you can live in, or perhaps it's investment property and maybe you rent it or whatever. Vacation rentals, whatever you're talking about doing. So don't be afraid to investigate the real property or real things that you would buy and sell, because we're so used to buying contracts, you know, and not, and, you know, there's no responsibility. You just buy it and you sell it and buy it and sell it. But there's other things out there too that can be worthwhile investments as a backdrop to all the other things that you do. And then before you know it, you're kind of an investor. You're looking for anything and any place that you can buy. I know people who are very much into, I forgot what it's called, numismatics, you know, the coins where people buy and sell coins, and they understand the coin market, and they know what they're doing. You have to know what you're doing in any of these things, just like you had to know what you're doing in the markets. But just a lot of indications that real estate is done on the downside, as far as I'm concerned. Enough for me to get on live radio, you know, for the last several months since February, and say, you know, we really think it's bottomed. And I don't like to say things like that frivolously, because I don't want somebody to take advantage of that information and be hurt by it. I would rather say nothing or I don't know than, you know, have you get in a bad deal. So there you are. So doesn't this look like a good week to go to California, Dwayne, considering the markets are slow?
Yeah, it's probably as good a week as any.
Yeah, I'll tell you. So there you are. I think that's about the whole darn shooting match for us. The market's bullish. I think higher prices are likely. Because I'm talking about the ES right now, S&P 500. And that's all we really have for today. And Robin, do you have anything you'd like to add, or do you want to tell us a little saying of some kind?
I'd like to ask if anybody has any psychology questions that it's open to just, you know, typing them in and they'll repeat them. So that's one thing.
Here's a better way of saying that, Robin. Does anybody want to improve their trading
there
by getting rid of bad habits that have been bothering you for the last 20 years that you've brought into the trading arena? How's that?
I couldn't have said it better.
That's probably true. You probably couldn't have.
No, you just have a wonderful way with words. So, anything that anybody has been stuck by or has had a challenge with or feels that if they improve that it would change their trading, feel free to ask the question. That's one of the reasons why I'm here. I know I've been pretty quiet lately. I'm going to start to add some more content. We do have a workshop coming up on Saturday morning, 10:30 Eastern Time. So please be prepared to take that. It's called How to Survive a Trading Blow-Up. It's free. And you can go to the CFRN website and pull it up and register there. And we're very excited to be doing that with Daniel Trading. And
I'll repost that on the blog again.
Excuse me?
I'll repost that again on the blog tonight.
Okay, perfect. That would be terrific. And this weekend with some of the news on the Biden blunders.
Mm-hmm.
I went and actually saw the campaign this weekend, mm-hmm. and it reminded Virginia, or I think he was in the state of, where was he? He was in Virginia, but he said something about, oh, all of you in North Carolina will be, he completely referred to a different state.
He should be in comedy. The guy looks, Leslie Nielsen. He reminds me of a Leslie Nielsen type. He would have been so good in comedy. He's got such a great, goofy, meaningless smile, Joe Biden.
Yeah,
and
I mean, he's just like
good for comedy.
He's in another world. I mean, just another world. And then he put the, they're going to put y'all back in chains. That was probably the best, referring to the banks, describing the banks. It's like, what is wrong with this man?
Yeah, actually, the truth of the matter is the banks didn't put them in chains. The banks were instructed by the government to loosen up their lending, to let a whole bunch of people who couldn't afford to take loans out, like out-of-work construction workers, to get $500,000 loans because housing was going to go up forever. That was the brilliance of our government. That wasn't putting people in chains. That was giving people all the rope they needed to hang themselves.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly
so he's got it completely wrong. They're going to put you back in chains. What chains is he referring to?
Well, it was just such an unbelievable comment in general. I mean, I just don't understand how people can.
I think we're having a problem with
spins on it. I love to just wait for the spin because the spin is so ridiculous that they come out with these statements of, you know, why he said it and what he was referring to and, you know, just explaining him away and like they just now they're going to hide him. They're not going to let him see anybody for a while, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So with that I have a quote with by Geraldine Ross, respect yourself, listen to what you really want, and follow your instincts. They are usually right.
There you are. I just along those lines, and then we'll go because I know it's getting late here, but I just want to say I did ask somebody who's kind of far left over the weekend. I said, we've got $5 trillion more in debt, so you're aware of that. We're going to have another $4 trillion by the time our president is through when if he wins this election. I was going to say when because I believe he will, but, you know, let's just say if he wins this election, he'll have the opportunity and will take it to put us $4 trillion more in debt. Yeah. You know as well as I do that debt has to be paid off by somebody. And that as good as your intentions are, that however many people you want to help, you're going to hurt a large, much larger group of people if you crash this country with debt. And so my question was to him, how do you actually see this? Let's just go along with your program. Let's just keep spending. Let's keep taxing. Let's just keep doing all that stuff. How is it that you see this ending magically okay? What? How would you see this ending? What does it look like at the end when we get up to 20 and then we're up to 22 trillion? How do we end that? How is it that you see all this spending ending just okay? Because in the real world where real people live, not in the world of ideology, but in the real world, all that money has to be paid back in order to balance the deficit. Mm-hmm. And when you ask the left that question, this person didn't have the answer. I don't think anybody has an answer to how they see this ending. Is something magical going to happen? Is that what they're expecting? Is God going to come in? Is that what they think? Is there going to be some divine intervention that is going to occur that's going to make that debt go away? Is there going to be an upsurge in the economy so unexpected and so unbelievable that it's going to all the money that comes in from the government, from the people are just going to be, you know, it's just going to pay it all off? How do they see it ending? Well, and if they don't have an answer, then why would we want to go down that path where we just do nothing but create more and more debt? It is just a shame that, you know, we're so divided in the country. There's so many people that are, you know, split from others with regard to what we should be doing with this, you know, to solve the problem. And, you know, and that is the problem, is that the government wants to solve it, and they want to spend enormous sums of money doing so. And unfortunately, I think in the end, it's going to just be a lot worse. This could usher in a really, really long bad period for the United States of America. And that's, you know, I'm not going to spool up into all this, but it's just funny that I wonder if somebody in the audience is on the left, and no one's going to beat you up, but how do you see this ending? We're just going to keep adding more deficit, more trillions to the deficit. We're going to help people. We're going to have all kinds of, you know, programs. We're going to spend, we're going to increase the government. We're going to do all this. It's just going to keep spooling up, and there's not enough money to pay for it. How do you see it working out? What is the vision that you have for how this ends nicely? Because I don't see it. I see it ending in the potential for tremendous austerity that's going to have to take place at some point by people. And nobody likes that. But you saw what happened in Europe. You've seen what happened in Greece. And at some point, you keep putting it off, and it just keeps getting worse. It's like a bad tooth. You better go to get it taken care of, because it only gets worse. I don't know. They don't have an answer for how they see it. If you have an answer, I'd love to hear from you what it is that you see, how this ending. The economy just comes bursting back and all the money comes in. I don't know. I'd like to hear it from you. I really would. I won't make, I'm not going to bash or anything like that. I'm really curious to see how you see it all ending if we keep doing what we're doing now, which is just spending trillions and trillions of dollars.
And don't you think the attitude right now, again, is by at least half the country, is that they are so uncertain about what's going to happen with the debt that that's why everything is stopping. So yeah. I think the uncertainty level just gets increased because the people who really know something has to break
people who live in the real world are just sitting and waiting. Right, people who aren't stuck dreaming in ideology, they're living in the real world.
Right,
they're the ones that are saying, and I think you make a great point. The further this goes, the more uncertain people are going to feel.
Right, and I have to tell you, I to shift the subject just a touch. There was this wonderful show on CNBC. I think it was last night about. It was called 2020, and it was kids with these great ideas that are going to be funded. They're going to pick, I think, six that are under the age of 20 with these incredible ideas. And I was just blown away by these kids because they're so unaffected by what's really actually happening in the country that they're still innovative and entrepreneurial and still wanting to make things change. And they're... it was just amazing what they were doing under the age of 20. And there was some, there was one that was 15 that just kind of blew everybody away. It was amazing. And so, you know, hopefully we don't, we seem to have lost that United States spirit. You know, it's more, okay, what can we collect from the government than it is to, you know, be able to be entrepreneurial and start a new company and put other people to work and get creative and innovative. And it's just like, oh, how much can the government give me for my check? Just, it's horrible. I mean, it's just, it's going to break. It's going to break.
It's going to break.
Some point, for sure.
This Dwayne's just putting up one thing after another. He's hard at work.
Ann Romney married in 1968, lived in a dingy basement apartment while her husband finished his education. Stay-at-home mom who raised five children while finishing her own undergraduate education by taking night courses. Diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 97, yep. Breast cancer in 2008. Obviously a spoiled, rich white woman who never worked a day in her life.
Yeah, is that amazing?
Right. Well, I'd like to answer that, and for the people who are on the far left, you're funding programs so that people can never work a day in their life.
Right.
So you have a lot of nerve pointing to other people who do work when many of your programs are designed to stunt the growth of people and get them a check every month for doing nothing. Those are the programs that your side is working on.
Yeah.
So don't get me started.
I know.
All right. Well, listen, Dwayne, we'll be back tomorrow. I will plan on there he is, $15 trillion in debt. I built that. That's good. These are great.
I think that is
fabulous.
You missed one of the earlier ones with that one that I really liked. And I probably...
Dwayne, you had something a couple weeks ago or a week ago, I can't remember when, and you listed all the things that, you know, Romney had done with his million-dollar donation and all that. I think that was spectacular. I don't know why they're not putting that kind of stuff out more.
I don't know.
Than what they're doing, because they seem to be just being off defensive versus offensive and telling people who he is. And there's some amazing qualities that he has.
Yeah.
You know, that he brings to the table. And
one of them is not charisma.
No, I know. I feel so sad for him, because I've seen the guy speak in Boston, and he does pretty good, but I think he's got so many people telling him what to do, he's confused how to put it out there. And he's walking on eggs when he does it, because he knows that everybody's hanging on every word, you know. And
Barack Obama has Jimi Hendrix level charisma.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very hard to beat.
Iran does not allow gay marriage. Iran kills gays. Leave Chick-fil-A open and nuke Iran.
That's good.
this
is some of the best stuff you've produced.
Who sent me that? Bill sent me that. Thanks, Bill.
No, Bill. That's good for Bill. Well, again, please join us on Saturday and be there or be square.
Okay, so repeat it one more time.
It's How to Survive a Trading Blowup at 10:30 Eastern Time. And you can sign up on the CFRN site, or you can sign up. There's a link also on the robindane.com site. Please check your emotional trading test. You know, I don't know if you realize that there's an emotional trading test that's for free on my site. It's on the homepage. There's a big red button at the top. And you can check out your emotional wherewithal from that. And typically when I start coaching with somebody, they take the test before they start, and then they take the test after their coaching so they can see the things that they've learned to manage better, so they can see the difference. Because sometimes the stuff that we do is a little bit unmeasurable, and but, you know, traders feel better. So that's the key thing. So definitely check that out, and there's a lot of there's a bunch of free stuff at the bottom in the middle that will help you and give you some answers to why you do what you do, and that will absolutely help you with your trading. Make sure you have a trading plan, working on something there, And
the link is in the chat room right now, guys. For everybody that's in here, you can just
So there's the big red button, test your trading the motion, and then on the right side there, the top there, the big red button, and then there's the Daniel Trading on the right side to register for the webinar right there. Just click there to register, and it's going to go right to description and to
Saturday morning, guys.
Free.
What time?
10:30 Eastern time.
10:30 Eastern.
On Saturday,
7:30
yes.
My time.
And I did have a mission with my Red Rock Search and Rescue, but I haven't succeeded yet at my mission. They put a rock out in the desert, and they put the coordinates of the rock. And you had to find this rock and put your call sign next to the rock and take a picture that you were actually there. So I got pretty close, but I didn't realize it was the BLM area where people could go out and shoot weapons. So I'm driving around hearing these gunshots, and this one woman, I'm driving on the road, and this one woman was like aiming at my car. I was like, what is she? She's going to shoot me. So I didn't find the rock, but I did find all the people with their shotguns and high. I was amazed. I was just amazed how many people were out there shooting weapons.
You live a dangerous life, Robin.
I sure do. Yeah, so we're going out today again. We're going to find the rock and see if we can locate him.
Well, listen, pleasure being on the show. Robin,
yes.
We'll see you here tomorrow. Dwayne, see you tomorrow. Hopefully we'll have a little bit more volatility, but just reminder, this is normal for markets near the end of summer like this. This is not unusual.
Patience.
Yeah. Okay, thanks so much for having me on, and I'll see everybody tomorrow. And thank you very much for the questions today. Appreciate it.
Yes. Have a great afternoon.
And thank you, Dwayne. Thank you, David.
All right,
and have a wonderful evening.
I didn't notice what time it was. All I know is that I fell in love with you. And if all my dreams come true, I'll be spending time with you. Every day's a new day in love with you. With each day comes a new way.
Okay, that's gonna pretty much do it for us. Wrap up a quiet Monday. Now, I talked about right here, price looked like it wanted to head back down to test support at the 10.11, but we had to come back through the CFMA1, and the only thing that would change the picture would be is if this comes and turns, then we've got support right here, getting a turn right in the middle. If that happens, and in the next hourly candle, which is going to start up in 12 minutes, if you see this start to curl up and turn blue, then you want to look up in this area for a target, somewhere between here and here. Now, this will take a little patience. You got to wait for it to make the turn. And there's no guarantees that it's going to make the turn yet, okay? Because you still got this zone 14.15. Notice on the way down when we bounced back up, 15 held. And we came down, bounced back up, 14.5 held. And now on this bounce back up, so far 15 is held. What you got to see is a break and hold over the 15. Then the bottom part will come together. And then there's a shot at making a run up into this 18-19. So those are the things that have to happen first before you get the move up. Okay? There's got to be a break and hold above 14-15. Now, if this hour should suddenly come down and close below the MA1, then I would look for price to move still in the direction of 14.10, 14.11. These ranges are incredibly tight this week. There's not a lot of room there. It's a function of math. We just came off an 8-session streak that was the lowest in 62 years on the Dow. And so that's going to keep us, these ranges will stay constricted until there's something, whether it's a news event, an economic report, whatever it is, something to jolt us out of this. Could it be this quiet up into the election? Well, anything is possible. You always have to embrace that, that anything's possible. Is it highly unlikely? Yes. That doesn't mean it couldn't happen. Am I anticipating that? No. I'm not anticipating it. And Jeff just made a very good comment. He said, whatever it is, most likely it will happen overnight. Now, we see that play out again and again and again. The market makes the big moves when Wall Street is asleep. So, there's also a lot of chatter and saber rattling going on right now that all the stuff in Syria is being fueled by Iran to kind of get people's attention for them to make a preemptive strike on Israel. Now, there was one little email here that I had in that streak of emails that I didn't show, but it probably deserves to be shown. And let's see if I can find it. I know some people found those emails very offensive. A couple people said, I'm leaving. I'm offended. Well, I'm sorry. No. Not my intention to offend. I was just sharing with you an email I got. But then again, some other people said, those are, you know, I also got equal number of, you know, hey, that was pretty good. While you were watching the Olympics this weekend, 7 rockets fired from Gaza hit Israel. Share this if you didn't hear about it on the news. A lot goes on that you don't hear on the news, on mainstream media. But the information's out there and it's available. And this situation going on between Iran and Israel, you know, I mean, it's been going on since the dawn of creation, literally, you know, a lot of years. It's in the book. It is written. And it's important, okay, from a biblical perspective and biblical proportions. It's that kind of important. So we should all be very much aware of what's transpiring with Israel. And it is written that whoever is the protector of Israel, God will be their protector. And our current administration has come dangerously close to pulling us out of the position. In fact, would very much like to see us, I think, out of that position. And so, keep that in mind as you head to the polls this year. And that's going to do it. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a 1-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.